Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Since the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act in 2013, what impact has that had on actual voting trends and patterns? A new years-long study by the Brenham Center for Justice, a nonpartisan think tank focused on democracy and voting rights issues, finds there's been a widening gap between white and black voters. To tell us more, we're joined by Kareem Creighton. He's the Senior Director for Voting Rights and Representation at the Brenham Center. And Kareem, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me, David.
This is a massive study, a lot of numbers, a lot of digging involved, a lot of data. But, not a lot of surprises. Didn't we already know this before?
Well, I think there are things that many of us in the civil rights community have known, but this is the first time in which we are able to really quantify the scope of the change and the gap in participation between white voters and voters of color in this country. And we're able to, in a much more precise way than ever has existed before, talk about how that change has occurred, whether it's grown or shrunk over time. And so this really gives us the clearest picture, I think, that has ever existed. We think this data that we have analyzed is pretty much the most comprehensive set of information in existence that give us a nationwide look at the changes in voting participation over time, and by that, the gap that exists between white and non-white voters.
So the Roberts decision that gutted part of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, they found it to be unconstitutional. Section 5, or they said this is unconstitutional. How do they find that part of the Voting Rights Act unconstitutional?
So in 2013, as you said, the Supreme Court was presented with a claim that came from Shelby County, Alabama, making the argument that the preclearance requirements, the particular requirements in the Voting Rights Act that took areas that had an exceedingly strong pattern of denying and abridging the right to vote, put them in a special category of cases that had to essentially go and get federal review and approval for changes in law that had to do with voting. Shelby County was one of those jurisdictions. Most of them are in the South. Texas was another such jurisdiction. And the county went to the Supreme Court and said, we don't think that the current circumstances in 2013 merit continuing this special review process. And the Supreme Court, in looking at it, was presented with arguments in the other side, presented evidence by the Brennan Center and other jobs, a lot of different groups out there in the civil rights community, made the argument that, in fact, the things had gotten better. That is true. In our study, we show that the gap that defines white and non-white voters had shrunk to the point where it was getting closer to parity in 2013, but that was because of work that was done by Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. The Supreme Court looked at those two competing arguments, that things had gotten better and that they didn't know that we didn't any longer need to have Section 5, and that, on the other hand, people said, yes, things had gotten better, but they had gotten better because of Section 5 and that there was a continuing need for it. The Supreme Court looks at it and says, we take the former view, that we don't need these restrictions anymore, and that it's evidence that things have gotten better. And so they essentially suspended the formula used to designate areas that had been designated for special coverage. The dissent in that case, it's worth pointing out, though, said, you're basically making the argument that you're dry, holding an umbrella in a rainstorm, and that it's not raining. So if you actually got rid of the umbrella with the prediction that came from Justice Ginsburg at the time, you're going to get wet. And what we think that this evidence shows in our report is that since 2013, that gap that had been shrinking over time has started to grow. And it has grown most rapidly in the areas of the country that had been subject to preclearance. So we think this is the first quantified evidence that helps us understand the effect of Shelby County on these jurisdictions. And frankly, unfortunately, the signs are that the world has gotten worse for political participation.
So the argument was, we don't need a cop on the beat because they've solved the crime issue. but when you get rid of the cop on the beat, then the crime issue comes back.
I think that's another way of looking at it, exactly, that the absence of crime is not the the absence of arrest doesn't necessarily mean that there's an absence of crime. That, as you said, without a regulator on the beat, that people are going to get back to the same kind of shenanigans that got us into this process in the first place. And that's really what we're seeing. Not only that we're seeing an increase in this gap, but we're also seeing a return to the kinds of behaviors, suppressive vote policies that would have contributed to these expanded gaps between white voters and non-white voters. And that's the sad part of the Shelby County decision.
So, for example, as soon as the Supreme Court's decision came down that gutted the Voting Rights Act, within hours, Texas put forth its voter ID law.
Indeed. Texas led the way, not happily, but it led the way in adopting provisions that could not have gotten on the books under Section 5 had it been in effect. And that was joined very quickly by other states that had been blocked in prior circumstances under Section 5. And what it has meant is that laws have gotten on the books that have been the subject of a lot of litigation. But in the meantime, they've been applied in ways that make it more difficult for people, in particular people of color, to cast ballots. And that is what we think is one of the significant contributing factors to this growing gap.
Is that something we can point to when people say correlation is not causation? This happened and that happened, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're yoked. But when you say, well, just hours after the Voting Rights Act was, beaten down, here we have these new rules by Texas, that makes voting harder.
Right. It's a question that often comes up, and it's an important one to think about. Like, what are the contributing factors that go into turnout? We take account of all of that. As a general matter, we point out, just to emphasize, this gap has grown across the country to some degree. But what we also know to be true is that in those places where this special group of states existed, that gap is growing more so. And we take account of all the traditional factors that go into turnout that would make it less likely for people to vote. Age, socioeconomic status, region, all these factors are taken into account. And what we see is this difference still exists. And we went further in this process to look at those places, not just those places that were under preclearance, but those jurisdictions, the counties within the country where the Justice Department had previously issued objections, places that have had a record of violating Section 5. And we see an increased likelihood and an increased gap, even compared to other Section 5 jurisdictions. So it's hard to discount that this relationship is more than just correlation, that it is, in fact, the result of bad actions that we think are harming voters of colors in the very places where Section 5 was doing the most work.
So I just want to make a quick point about when we talk about the voter ID law, and this is something that frequently gets missed. Voter ID laws can be very wide, and, they have voter ID laws in all over the country, and some are stricter than others, and Texas has one of the most strict voter ID laws. It has to be a photo ID. Only a certain ID will work. You can't use a student ID, but in other states, like in Delaware, you can use a piece of mail that came to your house and shows you you can use that. So it's very flexible, but Texas has a very tough and strict and rigid voter ID law that does seem designed to be, in a way, not to help people vote, but to keep them from voting. I mean, does that seem right to you?
That's right. But it's also important to note that that is but one of many policies that have this sort of suppressive effect. Often people get lost in the weeds sometimes of thinking about, well, what's the individual impact of any one provision? It does have some negative impact, and we've seen other cases where laws similar to Texas have been blocked because they have had suppressive effects. But it's important to remember that Section 5 has application over a wide variety of policies, going from polling place availability, the number of hours that people can cast ballots, what people can do to help others cast ballots. As you know, the state of Texas has also passed a series of other voting regulations that if you take all of the sort of cumulative effects on the public, that number actually does tend to, you know, grow in terms of the number of people that are affected by that suppressive impact of these ballots. And what we found essentially over the period of time since Shelby, that impact of votes that weren't cast by people of color easily gets into the hundreds of thousands. And so it's not just a small thing in terms of aggregate impact. But of course, there's the moral concern representing the citizens' right to cast a ballot that anytime it happens, we should be concerned about. But that number is quite large. And Texas, unfortunately, has some of the largest gaps, particularly with respect to Latino voters in the country, where it comes to that increased turnout gap between white voters and non-white voters.
For example, Texas tried to pass a law that limited the number of hours that you can polls will be open for early voting on Sundays, which would have made it much harder to do souls to the polls, which is something where African-American churches will go en masse to go vote simultaneously. And now they were trying to keep that from happening. This part of the death by a thousand cuts, the cumulative effect of just making it harder for a targeted population to vote without actually saying out loud what they're trying to accomplish. We're going to talk more about this when we come back from the break. If you've got a question or a comment, please call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Source continues right after this.
Support for TPR comes from La Fonda on Main, honoring the authentic cuisine of interior Mexico since 1932. Open for lunch, brunch, and dinner. More information at lafondaonmain.com.
The EarthX 2024 Environmental and Sustainability Congress of Conferences is happening in Dallas, April 22nd through the 26th, bringing together all sides with one important mission: protect our planet. For info, earthx.org.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. When the Supreme Court knocked down a core part of the Voting Rights Act in 2013, Chief Justice John Roberts argued that some of the law's protections against racial discrimination were no longer necessary. A new study by the Brennan Center for Justice shows us how wrong Justice Roberts was and is. What can be done? What are the impacts? And how do we move forward? We're joined by Kareem Creighton. He is the Senior Director of Voting Rights and Representation at the Brennan Center for Justice. How do we know that this is impacting states, some states worse than other states? Does that show us something?
Well, we know this because we're able to look, and I should have said this at the beginning, we have about a billion data points of showing voter files across the country demonstrating a lot of information about the voter, but also whether they showed up or not. That's what we're allowed to do with state records that, you know, track voting behavior. So we're able to look state by state to determine whether or not a person is showed up in each election and then make some assessments about comparisons, right, over time. And so the impact of a given state, we're able to basically pull together based on, right, amassing the voter records from each one of those states. And frankly, even within those states, we're able to look at county by county. And that gives us the ability to be able to assess the impact of policies at the state level that states might adopt, but also because we know elections ultimately are governed in some respects by each county's decisions as to the polling places and the hours and how, as a practical matter, easily people are able to get to the polls in and out. We're able to track all of that to be able to say something about the impact of that. And so the statements we're able to make about the impact of preclearance really comes from the fact that we're able to divide the data in ways that is grouped according to state. And that's really the important way of understanding how, as we look, you know, after Shelby County, we see this acceleration in this growing gap. And, you know, you'd like to think that it was just sort of happenstance, but it's hard to deny given all the different ways in which the data point in a particular direction, and even more so when you limit yourselves to areas where we know there have been past actual violations of law. It's hard to deny that that is due to policymaking on the part of decision makers that tend to make it harder and not easier to cast a ballot.
Let's go to a caller. Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And Jennifer, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi, Dave. And hi, Kareem. I have a question that is a little flip-flopped, but if I'm trying to see through the perspective of the lawmakers for our voting in Texas anyway, and I am wondering if they, is it possible that they truly believe that what the laws that they're passing are helping with our elections? And if so, how are they helping?
All right. Jennifer, thank you for the call. So we've heard from Texas lawmakers that they're trying to make voting easier and cheating hard. Is that what you're actually seeing with these laws, Kareem Creighton?
I think the answer, unfortunately, is no. I try to hesitate to give statements about what the intentions are behind a lot of these laws, because we can't get into the heads of people easily without a lot of court analysis to determine the why of it all. But we know that the impact of these bills are almost always cutting back on the opportunity to vote. The Brennan Center also puts out regularly a list of, we call it the Voting Rights Roundup, new statutory policy that's been enacted in each state, yearly, in fact, even by quarter, to see the trend of legislation. And we categorize it into legislation that expands the right to vote and legislation that maybe contracts or challenges the right to vote, that makes it more difficult to vote. And Texas, unfortunately, is often on the ledger on the making it more difficult to cast ballots. The impact of this shouldn't be denied. That is, the fact that these bills, as you described earlier, David, the idea of not allowing Sunday voting seems a challenge. Maybe people try to, you know, argue that that has to do with saving money, but even if that's true, and I'm not convinced that it is, there's the impact on the people who aren't able to cast ballots. But it's very difficult to understand how you can see a strong trend in legislation. And let me just give you another example. This is probably the clearest one: redistricting. It's something every state has to do. Texas had one of the largest growth rates in the country over the last 10 years. Most of that growth came from people of color, almost, you know, easily more than half. I think it may be close to 80% of the growth in the state. If you look at the changes in representation in terms of the number of districts in which people of color had the likelihood of casting ballots for candidates of their choice, that number didn't change much at all. And depending on how you look at it, that number contracted somewhat. Now, I don't know how you make an argument that that was sort of making it more likely for people to vote. But what we know is that when you engage in things like vote dilution and gerrymandering, things that tend to limit opportunity for people of color, it makes it less likely for people of color to feel incentivized and motivated to cast ballots. But more than that, it really depresses the impact of any vote that's cast on the level of representation people get. So I respect the view that people can have myriad reasons for showing up and adopting legislation. It's just hard to deny the strong pattern that is true in Texas, and not just Texas, other states that tend to cut back on opportunity to vote, particularly for people of color.
And I'd like to add to that. So the state of Texas was very reluctant, participating in trying to get a complete count in the state of Texas, which was against the state's best interest. But when you look at the fact that a complete count would mean that they would be counting more of people of color, You can see why the state may not want that, at least these people in government. And if you take these representatives at and try and look at them with good faith, I want to bring up the fact that Texas makes it so hard to register to vote, impossible to register to vote electronically. You have to write a pen on paper. They call it the wet ink rule. And so that makes it, you know, there's no logical, reasonable reason, and they have been asked to provide one in court, and they're unable to do so to explain why we can't have electronic voter registration in the state of Texas. This is something that seems deliberately cooked up in order to make it harder to register to vote, Kareem.
And David, I'm glad you brought up litigation. We, the Brennan Center, are challenging Texas in a few cases involving both redistricting and also voting policies similar to the ones that you mentioned, David. And what's important here is the impact of not having Section 5. When we had Section 5, the conversation about what the likely effect is going to be on people of color, voters of color, would happen long before the law would come on the books. It was required by law, and the state of Texas would have to demonstrate it. They don't have to do that anymore. And in fact, the message that they give to groups like ours when we say, you know, the proposal that you have on the books or that you want to put on the books is likely to have some negative impacts. Can we think of other ways in which to adjust the law so that it lessens it? And they say, well, just sue us. That's the message that we receive. And what it means, though, is that we have to go in and sue not just us, but other organizations have to spend time and money to go into court and sue, which usually takes years on end. And what happens in the interim is elections. And those elections usually occur under these illegal policies that later may get found to be invalid by the court, but you don't get to redo an election. And so what you're seeing in this data that we're offering in this report is the impact of that, votes that could have been cast by people of color, but that for various reasons weren't. But we can't ignore the impact of not having Section 5 allowing these suppressive policies to get on the books.
Another caller, Rose Marie. We're kind of short on time, but go ahead.
Yes, are you there?
Yes, Rose, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to tell you that, yes, Texas makes it harder for us to vote, but we need to give our voters the information that they can take anything to the polling site. They can take their utility bill. They can take their payroll stubs that has their address on there. Well, as long as we give the information to the voters, don't let it stop you that you don't have a photo ID or a driver's license. Please go out and vote.
All right, Rosemary, thank you so much for that. But to that point, though, that she was bringing up about people, it seemed like when they make a big deal, when we know that they're trying to suppress the vote, people react to it, and we do see extra effort and people do vote. But is a lot of this, the way that they do this with the death by a thousand cuts, trying to do it in a way that people don't notice?
Well, I think that's part of what the state's that adopt these laws often will say, well, it's not that big of an impact and we shouldn't be concerned about it. The caller that just offered a view is absolutely right. We should all do everything that we can to encourage people under all circumstances to cast a ballot because it's your constitutional right to do it. It's also true that the state should be leading the way in encouraging that. And where there are structural changes that can be made that make it likely that people will cast a ballot. And we saw basically what that looks like in 2020, for example, when many of the normal rules that sort of limit opportunity led to a record level of casting ballots, including by people of color, still with a gap, but we saw that there was an increase. And the lesson, unfortunately, that a lot of states took from that is, well, we need to go back to what we used to do. And that's the challenge that we, I think, need to be thinking about. Why is it that states are on the side of limiting opportunity as opposed to expanding opportunity to cast ballots? And we think our study does a good job of showing the potential to be gained to our democracy if we have more people involved in the process.
Kareem Creighton is the Senior Director of Voting Rights and Representation at the Brenham Center for Justice. Kareem, thank you so much for heading to study and coming on the board and telling us about it today.
Thank you so much. Take care.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening. Thank you.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.